Scallops?
Scallops?
Yes.
You're gonna ask for scallops, this could be.
Yeah,
just. Got some more chips, huh? Alright. We just come from interviewing the guys from The Herd. We went to interview them in Marrickville, which is in Sydney's inner west, at a place they call The Mansion, the Elephant Tracks Mansion, which is a little bit funny in itself. It's more like a warehouse sort of thing, but it is very cool nonetheless. And the whole way through the interview, I'm just here with my sound engineer, by the way, Timothy.
Hello.
And the whole way through the, did you hear that chewing through the interview?
Hear it? Of course I did. He devoured entire box of shapes.
Yeah, yeah. Earth Boy, one of the MCs from The Herd, the whole way through the interview was
smashed
his box of shapes. And anyway, it's got us quite hungry, and it's around lunchtime, so we've stopped in quite appropriately at our local fish and chip shop to grab some chips and some scallops.
Yeah.
You know, I love that The Herd story started right here with eating fish and chips.
A flying scallop over the lake.
Whoa.
Like a $3.40 bag of hip hop from your local fish and chip shop. Ah, scallops with the lots of flavour on top.
You gotta pass them down, man.
To pass them around, right? You'll have to work the edits.
Yeah. Cheers, man.
Cheers, mate.
I think it was 1998. One of the current members of The Herd, this guy called Tracksuit, Kenny Sabir, just got together a whole bunch of friends to sort of put songs together as a farewell present for a friend. From that idea and all the contacts he made from that, he was like, oh, you know, it's pretty easy to put together a CD, and CD burning technology was kind of up and coming. He was like, oh, maybe, you know, we should sort of get some more friends together and put out a CD and we'll burn them ourselves. Kenny found out I was making beats. He just sort of approached me at a party. I sent him a track, and most of us are on this CD as well.
I'm not.
Except for you.
But I played at the launch.
You played at the launch? Yeah.
01.
Me and Aussie Battler formed a band at uni called Trace Element. And we got asked to play at the launch. There's a poster up on the wall here.
It's a blue poster with a cartoon elephant on it.
Yeah.
It says Elephant Tracks, Food to Eat Music By.
Yeah. Which we got, it was like 600 people came to that show.
Newtown Globe, $3 entry.
$3 was pretty expensive back then. $5 would buy you a CD, and $10 would buy you a small car.
Hello, boys.
I had an ex-girlfriend who I went to a dinner with, and just so happened that Kenny and a few others were there, and I struck up a conversation because I was working on some bedroom level hip-hop with a couple of my mates from the mountains.
I was writing
you can tell you're the producer too. Can you pull the mic up?
I don't know how to use these things, man. Basically, I came into it because I was writing bedroom beats, drum and bass. I think the connection was my older sister somehow ran into Kenny, and she told him that I was writing some beats, and then I got his number somehow and ended up sending him some of my stuff, and he was like, oh, this is cool, I want to put it out. And at the time I think that would have been about 16 or something.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
For the first Herd album, we still had the compilation mentality, so a lot of tracks were kind of just submitted by people in the label, and then we kind of collectively decided which tracks to release. And
in fact, the first two Herd albums were written very much not as artist albums, they were written as collaborations between various people. The label existed first, and The Herd was just a kind of dumb pun about being a bunch of elephants.
It started off very collaboratively and slowly became a band, I guess. We're very unconventional in that sense. It's no wonder that we're still a bit unconventional.
But if it had to come from the other way around, where you had like one person whose band it was and who's the creative control, we wouldn't be in this situation now, still in a band making a collaborative music and running a label together.
That also meant that every little thing that we achieved as a collaborative group was amplified, because you didn't necessarily have anything to do with the song that got played on radio. But you were still part of the group, so everyone kind of cruised along with it.
Pains, main lines, trusted train departing. We rushed it, discussed it, with lack of preparation, separation from CD scenes, lit a stretch, reverse beats, immersed in the heat from the battler's technique. What's a need?
Scorps was written back when most of the band was vegetarian in Summerland at the fish and chip shop there. Kenny came up with the concept of the scallop burger instead of the meat patty.
Not one of Kenny's best ideas.
They're quite delicious, the scallop burger. You should try one.
I'm not saying it's a bad one, yeah. But, you know, on the scale. The picture that can be painted is that there was no hip-hop, local hip-hop on radio. It just wasn't. There were no acts that really had any national standing. So Scallops came along and there was a very Australian-ness about it, and the idea of the fish and chip shop and summertime, and people embraced the song.
I don't think it won us any like accolades in the local hip-hop scene.
No, we were target from then on.
Yeah, I came to that song after I'd heard some of your other records. I was driving along and this guy on the radio says, oh, someone's requested Scallops by The Herd, and I went to get the CD, and on the CD someone has crossed it out and written, do not ever play this song.
Wow.
Like a $3.40 bag of fresh hip hop from your local fish and chip shop. Ah, Scallops with the lots of flavour on top. When we do what we do, we give heads the bops. Like a $3.40 bag of fresh hip hop.
2003, we released An Elephant Never Forgets, our second album, in a similar vein to the first album. It was collaboration, different band members coming together and taking control of a track, and then everyone else adding to it.
Burn down a pub, we heat up a club, get a punter feeling hot like they use anchor rub. When we do what we love, see the smoke above, with a hot-headed approach, turn and push to shove. Like a bushfire in scrub, we ambush the dub, set in a lighter rap book with a pencil stub. It's essential cause, feel it heat your blood, we be blazing on the mic like Nimbus blazes bud. Get these words in sight like Molotovs in flight, and set a panic in the public like a meteorite strike. Have you got a light? I got a bomb tonight, and I will set it off when I feel the mood is right. Try up, burn down a parliament. We burn down a flag.
The controversial Burn Down the Parliament. It gained The Herd some negative attention after it coincidentally hit the airwaves the same week of the 2003 Canberra bushfires. And then this track.
77% of Australians agree with John Howard's actions on the Tampa.
I wish that this problem we're not out.
Off the same album, 77%. It caused a massive stir, not only for its progressive message, but the fact its really coarse language made it onto national radio. The story behind 77% starts with Ozzy Battler.
It all came about because he had a chat with his next-door neighbour, old fella, who he'd always got along with. He was having a chat over the back fence. It was just after the Tampa incident, and the guy was like, they should all drown. He was just completely dismissive of these people in distress and the government's response to it. And he just went to his room, banged out a beat and wrote these lyrics. And the next day or the day after, he was playing it on local community radio.
Yeah, there was a bit of heat on that for a while.
We didn't do it because we had calculated that it would cause a stir. We did it because it was a song that needed to be written. We never thought that it would be something that would in any way be picked up by radio. And one of our guys got it into the edit suite.
And put like elephant kind of
sound. There was no kind of...
Need a shake up.
Yeah, it wasn't like we sat down with the band and went, what's appropriate here? He just got elephant noises and things. It was the most ridiculous, stupid, absurd edits that we could have done for a song as serious as that.
Maybe that's why that version never got played and the cunts version got played.
These cunts need a shake up, wake up. This country needs a fucking shake up, wake up. These cunts need a shake up, wake up. Talk back, squawking hacks, won't relax until Jonesy's a manic and laws
are... In 2005, we put out the record The Sun Never Sets. It was the first record where we really decided that we were going to make a go of trying to have everyone involved in most of the songs. So we tried to pretend we were a real band, and in the process, I think became one.
My name's Jane Tyrrell. I'm a singer, songwriter, performer, recording artist with The Hurt. I joined the band in 2005.
She was in another group called Blades of Hades from Newcastle. They're just like this hardcore hip-hop sort of group, you could say.
Very, very Newcastle. Like quite industrial sounding, quite raw and relentless.
And they have this amazing singer, Jane, in the band.
Yeah, it was a weird fit.
I guess Shannon is just like, he's just someone who talks to everybody, you know, and back then we'd kind of had a couple of chats and he's complimentary of my vocal and the other boys as well. But yeah, it was Shannon who was kind of leading Under Pressure, the song that I guested on first.
This is hell, ride me soon, hope you're well, life is hell.
We did the tour for that record. Everyone sort of was thinking, because we ended up playing like Under Pressure, and we were all sort of thinking, oh, it'd be great to have Jane here, you know. It's such a good fit, like, you know, it just feels right. And then I think on the spot,
called her up and said, do you want to be in the band?
And she slotted in just, you know, perfectly.
Simon Berserkatron called me and he said, it's just not the same without you, we all agree. We really want you in the band, you know, like it feels like the missing link. And so it was pretty awesome. And I could hear what I could bring to the band and what I brought to the band. I spent a lot of time with some Maori guys and we'd pretty much just sing on Friday and Saturday nights in our teenage years, which is, I guess, kind of unusual. Four-part, six-part harmonies, and I just completely fell in love with it. And I kind of would just get this, I know it sounds cheesy, but burning desire to sing. If I wasn't singing, I almost like get a feeling like I just had to do it. It was like a bit of an addiction. It's actually quite physical. I feel the absence of the vibrations of singing if I don't do it. I know that sounds bizarre. My dad always used to tell me to shut up because I'd hum continuously.
Jane's still singing most Friday and Saturday nights, and her humming went on to become a key feature of The Hurt sound. Over the 10 years, The Hurt have had the chance to collaborate and cover some Australian classics. It's been these moments that have meant the most to the band. The biggest of these was their cover of Red Gum's I Was Only 19.
Check. Mum, Dad and Denny were some amongst many who turned up to see the passing out parade at Pakapanyu.
John Schumann came on tour with us for a little while after that song had hit the ground and was taking off, and he's a really remarkable person, you know. Like, he's an excellent lyricist and he's really experienced so much, and that song just captures something so precious and so emotional and raw and real. I guess that kind of gave a whole new perspective to the track. And one gig I remember in particular was at the Gaelic Theatre, and all the upper level was full of veterans. I've never been so nervous in my life. It was just like goosebumps the whole time. I just felt such, so proud to be singing a story that they felt was important to be heard, and I think there were a lot of tears. I think it was really great to put a contemporary voice on what is unfortunately still really a shared experience. We were really honoured that John was behind it and really supported it. He's a really good friend of ours now.
Please can you tell me, doctor, why I still can't get to sleep? The scars left in me. Night time's just a jungle, dark and a barking M16. You keep saying rest in peace. What the hell's this rash that comes and goes? Don't suppose you can tell me what that means. God help me. I was only 19.
And then in 2008 we did Summerland, which was the first album with the current lineup, I suppose. All eight of us. Yeah, that was the first album post the Howie era.
There's a really strong eagerness between a couple of the members in particular, just keeping on top of what's going on in the political climate, social climate, and really we just kind of get our backs up when people aren't being treated well and someone needs to have a voice, and weirdly enough we're in a position where we can do it, and that urge when you're having a discussion to butt in and put in your two cents because you're feeling like overwhelmed with the desire to contribute, well, you've got eight members that are kind of usually pretty keen to contribute. History will damn him. Once it seemed like nothing could damage him. Sasha Leo G, the way Shang Tsung. Crook, you got your eyes played in Mandarin. Finally, the king is dead. They cried off with his head. Everything must change.
Just like when we did our first record and Scallops was this innocent novelty song about summertime, every single record has had a mixture of light and dark. It's always been political, it's always been a little bit absurd, it's always been reflective, it's always been introspective and really exuberant. I think it's just a perfect example of the lack of acts that really address some of these issues.
Now, let's talk about in 2009, the Calder Coast scandal or whatever you want to. Tell me the story, what happened and how you see it from the top.
From the top.
You've said too much.
Yeah. Already?
Yeah.
Legal counsel?
Yeah.
Can we just get to you?
Aussie Battler is in the studio. First of all, it's called Calder Coast. How did you not know that it was related to the coal industry?
Yeah, I mean, it might seem a bit naive on our part, but I mean, there's any number of festivals with stupid names or, you know, a regional festival.
Dave Perkins, the chair of the Calder Coast Festival. Do you understand the position the band's taken here?
Not at all. I mean, I've been in the media for
Roderick, you're the president of the Queensland Young Liberal Nationals. Does this all sound like fair reasoning to you?
I don't think it was brave at all. I think it was weak.
Leonard, you're from Serena.
I'm actually pretty disappointed in the Herd. I've been a Herd fan for years and they don't realise how much the coal mines actually do for my community.
We're very apologetic to our fans in Mackay and in the region who would have come along to the gig, but for us,
the way we work is we have a booking agent. We work quite closely with them. They sent through an offer to us. We accepted it. It was for a festival in Mackay called Calder Coast. Checked the website after a while. It had some burning coal in a barbecue, which looked like a barbecue. It didn't seem too controversial. Just a community festival. A few days before, a few things started filtering through. And
initially, we responded to the criticisms with a bit of a surprise because, as Dale said, it was a community event, and we accept that sometimes when you go out to these communities, particularly in regional Australia, these industries are the reality of the area. You know, you don't come in as from the city and sort of start directing people and telling people how they should run their lives. So when we did start getting attacked and emails, which were pretty harsh, you know, boycott the Herd, that sort of thing, it did make us go and check, and we did find out as a result of some of these criticisms that the festival, which had been in years prior a community event, they ran out of money. So the local coaling company came up with the idea of using it as an opportunity for a bit of a public relations exercise, as well as keeping the local area happy by allowing the event to continue. So we felt that we got involved in it fairly innocently, but as a result of finding this information out, we decided that we would donate the money to Greenpeace.
This was a few days before we were still going, because it still seemed like a community festival that had some coal mining interests and sponsorships. It's also, according to the website, sponsored by ABC local radio and, you know, the local paper as well. So there, you know, there was a whole list of sponsors. But then a day before,
we really found some very hard evidence. The event was actually the brainchild of the communications department at this coal company. Mm. So it was really about, okay, this is not just a community event anymore. That was the point where we just had to say no.
After a lot of hand-wringing, and because, you know, we didn't really want to pull out of a show particularly.
We've never pulled out of show.
Yeah, and by that point, I mean, there'd been a fair bit of media interest building.
Yeah, we had to choose the least worst option.
There was lots of learning lessons from it. I mean, we were really just sucked into a bigger issue. It really wasn't about us. It wasn't about one little band involved in this. And then once we made our decision to pull out, we got attacked universally because we became the stupid band that doesn't know where the power for their amps comes from. And we had to sort of sit there and just take it on the chin. And that's fine. It was okay. We're all grown people. We can handle it.
Yeah, we're going back to Mackay for this tour, so. Looking back 20
that first night that I was there as a member was crazy. Just to wake up and kind of look around and go, oh, this is bizarre. What has happened? It was just kind of smelly and just full. That's what happens when you tour with so many guys.
Oh, what about the time we almost missed the gig for that surfing?
Coolangatta.
We've flown into Coolangatta, but the gig was at Tweed Heads. We didn't realise there was a time difference.
So we landed in Coolangatta in Queensland time, but then went back to New South Wales time immediately.
And we were just casually strolling in and organised. We were wondering why the organiser was so stressed out.
Yeah, heaps of time. We've got an hour to go. Yeah, no worries.
Just irreplaceable live, especially now in this day and age where music is so easy to come across, and there is an expectation, particularly amongst younger people, that everything is available at no cost. You can never do that with a live show. You can never experience a live show without really actively going about pursuing it, you know, whether that means buying a ticket in advance and then going to the show and organising your whole night around it, or whether it means going and jumping the fence and getting it for free. You still have to really be about it.
The Herd's new album, Future Shade. I wouldn't say it's a hip-hop album at all. stand your ground, form a chain, hand to hand, start again. In fact, we've had all kinds of different kinds of responses from people all applauding what it is as a musical experience. It takes you on a journey. There's some really heartfelt personal experiences threaded into this album.
I've always felt we're a bit of a hybrid sort of band. Most of our feet are in the hip-hop kind of scene. Maybe 1.5 feet, maybe like 8 toes. But the other 2 toes, maybe the big toe, is kind of more in kind of the live scene as well, the rock scene, which is kind of where those opportunities like the Paul Kelly and Kev Carmody collaborations came to us as well. And we're mostly musicians as well, so that's pretty different for most hip-hop bands. And yet, as we go along, I think that musicality is getting more and more to the surface.
I sort of see us as like a bit of a snapshot culturally of Australia. We don't quite fit in anywhere in the music scene, but it makes us unique. People are sort of attracted to that, and somehow, some way over the years, people have been drawn to us probably for that reason. No one else is quite making the music that we're making.
I think that we've lent some validity to the hip-hop scene. We have, together with a bunch of other artists, shown that there's actually a real genuine enthusiasm and excitement about the kinds of messages that hip-hop is able to convey.
When it comes down to it, I mean, it's, and the way we always have run the label as well is kind of basis of respect and friendship. And the band itself is a bunch of friends, first and foremost. I mean, we hang out together outside of the band. There's not a kind of a concept of it being a purely monetary or kind of cultural pursuit. It forms from us being friends. And I think that's part of the reason why our live shows are such a celebration, a feeling of joie de vivre, or whatever you want to call it, happiness, fun.
She's a dreamer, something wrong, wish it's greener. How could they know of the carnival in fix when life got grim. If only they could taste the real thing beneath their feet beyond the ceiling. Like hounds that are stuck on it, chasing love and hating, babe, and shaking it. Baby dogs on the fin of it, move mountains closing in.
Myself a whale into the ground a whale. I live up to my whale. My father's name a whale.
Once more at a crossroads, looking up at signposts. All of those lives you never live and cannot know. So I wonder, will I wander or hold my line? And I find myself longing for what can never be mine. These tales tied together with invisible threads, lingering on what she said. What if instead of a missed opportunity, it just wasn't meant to be? Please believe I never fake what it meant to me.
Everything must change.
Don't I know it, in a moment hesitating, you've blown it. You wanna know the possible, but it would freak you out if you were shown it. So I'm holding my course until this road ends. I know the pen is a constant, but the ink is transient. More inclined to letting it ride than planning it. So I take my lumps, cause I wrote this story. It's always feast or famine, always death or glory.
What is the trade-off in your life? What did you pay? What is your price? What did you weigh up against?
Some of it.